Okay, we are going to get started here with the first presentation here at the Planet MicroCap Showcase Vancouver in association with Small Cap Discoveries here on day two. And just giving a couple seconds so that anybody who wants to listen in live has an opportunity to do so. And so this is me stalling. This is me stalling. This is me stalling. And here we go. All right. Now presenting in track one here at our event is Bill Crossland from Thermal Energy International.
Thanks, Bobby, and thank you everyone for your interest and thank you for attending. It's wonderful to see such a fabulous turnout over the last couple of days. So as Bobby said, I'm Bill Crossland, President and CEO of Thermal Energy International. And we say we are the profitable path to net zero. And I say that for two reasons. Number one, because we have a profitable track record of growth. And number two, because we help our customers become more profitable as we're reducing fuel use and carbon emissions. The standard forward-looking disclaimer. Okay, so what do? We provide energy efficiency and carbon emission reduction solutions primarily to very large multinational companies, and that's by design. You know, it tends to be the large multinationals that have the very large energy-intensive sites. So if they're using a lot of energy at a site, we can save them lots of money and do a nice big project for them. At the end of the day, they like us because we save our customers money by reducing their fuel use and reducing their carbon emissions. In terms of investment highlights, you know, often goes unnoticed that energy efficiency is by far the cheapest, easiest, and fastest way for us to reduce our carbon emissions. As a society, we lose about two-thirds of the energy we use. So two-thirds of the energy we use is going right up the stack or right outside. If we could just flip that around and actually only waste a third rather than two-thirds, we could cut our carbon emissions in half right there. We have 10 unique proprietary solutions, complementary, all to do with industrial thermal energy efficiency. We have significant repeat business from our who's who's list of multinational clients, and we have a track record of profitable growth, mostly organically, but also through accretive acquisitions. So the business case, you know, why are we growing? Why is it we so busy? Well, for whatever reason, when people think of energy efficiency, when they think reducing carbon emissions, for some reason, most people think electricity, because that's the easy part, quite frankly. You know, and at a residential site or a commercial site, about 50% of the energy used is electricity. The other 50% is thermal. It's a fuel that they're burning for heat. An industrial site, however, only 10% of energy use is electricity. The other 90% is thermal energy. And our customers will tell us they've already met their carbon emission reduction goals with respect to electricity. That's easy. You can buy green electricity right off the grid. The thermal side is much more challenging. And an industrial site, on average, about 50% of that thermal energy is lost, more than 50%, just as waste heat, sort of just being lost to the atmosphere. And so that's what we help them save. And the other reason the business is driving forward, it's thermal energy prices are higher and more volatile than they were a few years ago. In the U.S., in North America, they're about twice as high. In Europe, they're about three or four times as high. And we saw some really significant volatility during COVID and during when the Russians first invaded Ukraine. So there's a lot of volatility. Our customers are trying to remove that cost, remove that volatility. And the cost of carbon. I mean, the cost of carbon varies in every jurisdiction you're in, every province you're in Canada, every state you're in the U.S. But the biggest market is in the EU, where the cost of carbon credits has gone up about 300% over the last couple of years. Again, it spiked much higher during some volatile periods. It's come back down, but it's still about three times higher than it was a few years ago. So for our customers, improving thermal energy efficiency is the cheapest, easiest, and fastest way for them to meet their carbon reduction goals. So how do we do it? I mentioned we have a suite of 10 complementary thermal energy technologies, all to improve industrial thermal energy. You can see them on the right. The company started with the FLUACE, and the rest have been acquired over, you know, the last many years. And we deliver those solutions one of two ways, either as a total turnkey package where we go, we present an opportunity to a client. If they like it, we then design it, develop it, manufacture the equipment, and install the project. So literally all they have to do is turn the key. If it's a simpler application, they sometimes just buy the piece of equipment themselves. And with our technology, we can recover about 80% of the lost energy. So you can go from 50% efficient to 90% efficient. That's the potential that we can deliver for our clients, all with a compelling return on investment and short payback. We talked about the significant repeat business from our multinational clients. So the majority of repeat orders come from our top 10. If we look at who our top 10 customers were over the last several years, you know, it's mostly from them. About 60% of our orders have come from our top 10. And we've partially penetrated about 100 sites. And I say partially, in most cases, we've sold, you know, a small equipment order. We haven't done everything we can do to get them up to 90%. We haven't done a big project in most cases. It's just small orders. And initially, you might think, okay, 100 sites, you're pretty much done with those guys. There can't be much left. But those 10 customers have 1,000 sites worldwide. And so ballpark, we're probably only 50% penetrated in the sites we have been in. So that's 5% penetration total of the opportunity with these customers. And of course, we're adding new customers all the time. Yeah, we have a proven profitable growth strategy. And there's really three pillars. We want to leverage our existing high-quality customer base. We spend a lot of time developing relationships with our customers, trusted relationships, because our model requires a sole source delivery. So we establish that partnership, and then we work with them to do project after project. So we want to increase that high-quality customer base. We want to increase our portfolio of complementary products so we can sell more sites, more projects to more sites. And finally, we want to do that, and we have been doing it, both by growing the team and through acquisitions. So these are the results over the last 3 years. You can see our revenue is up about 63% since 2022. We have a May year end, so it's a little bit of an awkward year end, but our fiscal 2024 ended May 31st, 2024, so about 63% revenue to just under $26 million. That's a record level of revenue for us. Same with EBITDA, record level of EBITDA, but to about $2 million. And that's up over $2.5 million over the last couple of years. And the other interesting thing that you should note is we have been growing pretty aggressively over the last 18 months. So in that number, there's about $1.5 million of new costs this year, specifically related to three things. Adding more people. So, you know, we're up about 14 people over the last 18 months. We are developing a customized app, a custom mobile app that allows our salespeople and our engineers when they're on site to more efficiently and effectively gather data and identify energy savings opportunities so that we can then pitch to the client. We're also implementing an ERP system, and we also moved our UK-based production to a new facility that more than triples capacity. So all those costs are in there. None of them, you know, they're hitting the bottom line. They haven't hit the top line yet. They haven't added to the top line yet. Net income, about $1 million. So again, that's, you know, even including the $1.5 million in increased cost this year, a significant increase over the last couple of years. And record order intake as well, up 150%. And up about 8% over 2023. There is a fair bit of lumpiness to our orders. You can imagine, you know, a company with $20, $30 million in revenue, and they're getting orders that are sometimes $4 or $5 million. So there is some lumpiness to our quarterly results. And I always encourage people sort of to look at the longer term trend over the last 12 months or 24 months. And our order backlog, we ended the year. So May 31st, we ended the year with $18.7 million order backlog. That was about 43% higher than it was last year. So we're starting this year with an order backlog 43% higher than it was at this time last year. And then growth and project development agreements. This has been the most dramatic growth over the last few years. So again, you know, several years ago, we would be lucky to be working at, you know, 8 to 10 projects a year. And so this has to do with turnkey projects. So usually the way we sell these projects, because I mentioned it's a sole source delivery model. So you go to a customer, you go to a site, you gather a little bit of data, we go back and crunch the data, and we come back to them with a preliminary estimate on what we think we can do. You know, so based on this preliminary results we've looked at, we think we can save you, say, $1 million, and it'll cost you $3 million to do it. Is that something you'd be interested in? And they say, yes. We say, okay, that's good. That's not a firm estimate yet. We have to do the detailed engineering. But I tell you what, you sign a project development agreement with us, and we will go away and do all that detailed engineering in order to deliver back to you a project with a fixed price and guaranteed savings. And the important part, they pay us to do that. And the important part is they can't then use that engineering. We're not an engineering consulting company. They can't use that engineering. That engineering still is our proprietary property. So if they want to do the project, they have to do it with us. And so that's usually how any of these projects are sold. So you can see that the number of active projects that we've got going on right now is 33. It's down a little bit from last year. That's largely intentional. You know, we had sort of reached the amount we wanted to do. Historically, about two-thirds of these PDAs result in a project, an average of 12 months after signing the PDA. There's a lot of variance in that. It goes everywhere from 6 months to sort of 3 years. But on average, it's been about 12 months. So that's, you know, the order intake and the order backlog is a good, are good leading indicators for the next 12 months. The project development agreements is a good leading indicator for the next, you know, 12 to 36 months. So, yeah, summary. Energy, number one, energy efficiency, fastest, quickest, easiest way for our customers to reduce their carbon emissions and meet their carbon goals. We have 10 unique, complementary, proprietary solutions that we can sell to our customers to help them save their energy and reduce their carbon emission. Significant repeat orders from our, you know, who's who list of multinational clients, and a track record of profitable growth, both organically and through accretive acquisitions. So the strategy is working, and it's going to be more of the same. So we're pretty excited about where we're headed over the next few years. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Yes.
One second. Right. What are the bottlenecks, if any, for ramping growth faster? Is it salespeople? Is it the engineering side? Hardware.
It's people and it's engineers, engineering. That's why you see the number of project development agreements have ramped down a little bit. We track sort of what we call billable hours. We're not an engineering firm, but our engineers have to record all their hours. And as soon as it's sort of their billable hours, that it means order things they're working on, that where we have a purchase order for, gets above 50 or 60%, then they're not having enough time to do the front end load development stuff. So it's generally people. But as we grow, you know, it used to be salespeople to engineer was at about a one-to-one basis. But as we've grown, as we're becoming better known, as we're getting more momentum, we're finding that it's more like one-to-two. So two engineers for one salespeople, because each salesperson can sell more. So when I look at the people, you know, when I said our average headcount is up about 15 people over the last 18 months, that's five salespeople. Nine engineers and one admin person. So we've, over the last 6 to 12 months, it's been mostly engineers that we've sold, we've added. But at the end of the day, it's people. We're a technology company, right? So it always takes, you know, a good salesperson, because it's such a technical sale, it'll take them 2 to 3 years. You know, we don't expect anything in the first year. They're just learning the technology, developing their territory. The second year, we expect them to be about at 30% of expectation. In the third year, they're fully ramped up and running. Engineer, there's a less of a learning curve, but still it takes 6 to 12 months for them to sort of understand the projects and not have to have someone looking over their shoulder. But so at the end of the day, long answer to your question, it's people. People is the bottleneck. Yeah.
Does your new application shorten the PDA period?
It may. What we're really hoping, though, it will shorten the time to a PDA, because it'll have all the data. So you can imagine we've now got 10 technologies. When we had one technology, the sales guy just has to go and he has thinking about that. What information do I need to know whether there's an opportunity here for FluAce? Now he's got to think, what information do I need if there's an opportunity for all 10 technologies? So what the app does is when he's on site, when he's gathering data, it'll prompt him or her to ask certain questions, find out certain details based on the data that's gone in. The app will know, okay, it looks like there might be an opportunity over here. What about this? And so what we'll have, and as soon as he enters it, it's on our system. Everybody has access to it. So he doesn't have to download the information, write a report. The engineering team can download it, start cranking out where the opportunities lie. So it'll speed up the sales cycle for sure. Once we get a PDA, that's hardcore engineering to actually develop the project.
I have two questions. One is, you gave the example of $1 million return, $1 million annual savings, $3 million project cost. I mean, what is the average sort of time frame to get a return for them to actually see a financial return on the investment for a large project?
An average payback?
Yeah, like time frame. Like, do they see that after 5 years, or how long does it take to?
Well, the savings start right away.
Right.
How soon it takes them to pay it back is usually 2 to 3 years, right? So it varies depending on the jurisdiction, right? In Europe, energy costs are 3 or 4 times what they are in North America. So the paybacks are going to be quicker in Europe, a little bit longer in North America. But I would say 3 to 4 years is about average, depending on the type of project. The GEM, one of our technologies, GEM's Team Trap, they usually pay for themselves in a year. So if that's all they're doing, that's different. But that's what it is on average.
My other question is, so when you deliver the final proposal and it's, and you've got fixed price and you've got sort of a guaranteed savings, like what is, how much risk is there in that guaranteed savings number?
There's always risk, right? There's not a lot of risk. I say guaranteed savings because it makes it easier for you to understand, but really what it is guaranteed performance, right? Because we are saving them energy. So they have to deliver to us, you know, either hot air or hot water that's being lost, and we capture that heat and give them back more energy. So the guarantee is if you deliver X, we guarantee we will give you Y. So it's guaranteed performance. So these systems have been installed for, I mean, these aren't new, this isn't new technology. It's just getting a lot of attention now. We've got systems that have been up and running 20, 30 years. So we have a very good knowledge of how they're going to perform, as long as we get what the client agreed to provide us in terms of input.
Hi.
Yeah.
I'm a shareholder.
Thank you.
And from England. You're expanding in England. Are you hoping that the market over there in the UK and Europe will be greater than in Canada and the US?
Yes. We're expecting it to. I mean, solely based on energy costs and the price of carbon in Europe, Europe should grow faster than North America, and it is. But we're surprised by the resilience of North America as well. So several years ago, it was sort of 60% North America, 40% Europe. Year before last, it was more like 50-50. And this past year, it was more like 60% Europe and 40% North America. So North America continues to grow, but not at the same rate. So yes, in fact, most of the people we've added, not all, but most of the people we've added is in Europe. So we've added, let's see, 3 people just in the last 12 months, 3 people in France. We weren't in France at all. You know, and that's the challenge of the European market. You have to have, you know, a native speaker in each country. So we've added 3 people in France. We've added 2 people in Germany. You know, so and most of the, like I said, most of the engineers that we hired, in fact, not most, yeah, most, not all, but most were in Europe. So yeah, we're sort of ramping up Europe for sure.
2 questions, please. Could you give us some color on revenue diversity in terms of any service revenue, after parts, recurring revenue, and secondly, some elements of diversity in your geography, by revenue by geography and revenue by industrial sector?
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry, what was the first question? I only remember so much.
Beyond just selling new projects, any element of recurring revenue?
Yes, okay, I'll
revenue,
deal with
after
that.
Parts.
Yes. Not really a lot. You know, both as engineers would like to do, all of our technologies, obviously, were developed by engineers who founded the companies that we acquired. And engineers like to do, they like to engineer. So all of our technologies basically last forever. Most of them have very few moving parts, therefore they don't break down. That's one of the advantages we sell. And when I talk about $1 million in savings, I'm not talking about maintenance savings or water savings. They also save water. I'm just talking energy. So there's very little service revenue. We do offer a service contract for our customers. Most people that take us up on that are usually the public sector, you know, so hospitals, industrials generally are going to do it themselves. But also if we do, you know, say a $1 or $2 million project, The annual service is probably $20,000 or $30,000. So there's not much in terms of ongoing service or parts. And your next question had to do with, I think, technologies, diverse. Right. So geography, well, I said it's 60% Europe and 40% North America. In North America, and don't quote me on this, it's probably 80% in the U.S. It's mostly the U.S. In Europe, it's mostly the U.K., Germany, and then it would be Italy and Poland, because that's where we've had people longer. But, you know, our financials break it down by every country, you know, in the notes to the financials. And then the final was diversity by industry. So, again, I might get this wrong, but not the majority, but somewhere between 60, and again, it varies by year, depending on when we have get a large project. But food and beverage is by far our biggest sector. The next biggest sector is pharmaceutical. We get some mega projects every so often in pulp and paper. It's pulp and paper. When you get a pulp and paper project, it's a big project. Like we had one $10 million project. We had $7 million project. But pulp and paper almost exclusively relies on some sort of, you know, government subsidy. You know, if it's not a one-year payback, they're not interested. Whereas food and beverage, pharmaceutical, they'll do 5, 7. We've done a 10-year payback for food and beverage. So I would say 80% is food and beverage and pharmaceutical. Right over here.
You had mentioned past acquisitions. I was just wondering if you'd still be looking for future acquisitions. If so, what would you be looking for? And if not, what other capital allocation strategy do you have?
Yes, we are. I would like to do one in the next 12 months. I'm fairly conservative. You know, we grow methodically. So I wouldn't do, unlikely to do two acquisitions in 1 year. I want to do an acquisition, make sure it's integrated. So the last, we did one in 2018. We then acquired a bunch of technologies in 2021, so it's time to do another one. Historically, we were always looking for technology so that we have more complementary technologies we can sell our customers. We still would be interested in that, but even more so is we'd be interested in distribution. You know, where is there a company that might be doing something similar to us in either a geographical market or a sector that we don't have as much exposure in so that we can leverage that opportunity? Those companies usually also come with a technology, but the technology is not really our focus. It's the distribution. I think I only have a couple minutes left, but 3 minutes. That's lots of time. That's three questions.
You mentioned $1.5 million in growth spending last year. Is that mostly concluded going forward, or do you expect more growth?
Good question. Yes, I should have mentioned that. The other thing you have to keep in mind when if you're digging down into the financials, not only was that $1.5 million this year, the other reason the expenses went up is, you know, we operate in a lot of different currencies. I think the swing between foreign exchange gain and foreign exchange loss this year was like $600,000. So expenses were $600,000 due to currency. And now I've forgotten the question that had to do with. Yes, going forward. Yeah, we're not planning to add anymore. We think we've got, you know, again, very methodical and risk averse. So we've added a bunch of people. We're going to see how that plays out. We don't have any plans to add any more people over the next 12 to 18 months. We think we've got a good team now to sort of grow the business.
Hi.
80%. Yeah.
Sure.
It shortens the time to sell a PDA. It doesn't necessarily shorten the time to develop the project once we get the PDA. But yeah, so, you know, we had a great LinkedIn post. You know, we tend not to announce our customers, but we had a great LinkedIn post from Denon a few years ago, the COO of Denon, raving about a project that we just did and telling, you know, the public that we are now looking at projects in 5 other sites, and he named the sites. So, so it's to get to a PDA is much faster. The project still, because every site is slightly different. Like even if you're, it's the same application, even if they're manufacturing the same thing, the site layout is going to be slightly different. The cost of energy is going to be different. So there's a lot of variables in sites. So still takes some time to actually develop the project. My time up. One more. Oh, 1 minute. I got one more question. One more.
One last question, maybe.
Have you or can you detect any traceable relationship between jurisdictions that brought in carbon emission legislation and increased interest in your business? And what might be new jurisdictions you're aware of that are on the cusp?
Yeah, no new jurisdictions, but yes, that comes into play for sure. Having said that, I don't think it's really reliant on it, again, because our customers, most of it's food and beverage, so it's consumer products. They've told their shareholders, they've told their customers about their carbon emission reduction targets. So whether that credit is there or not, it doesn't really matter. The only jurisdiction where I see a potential change is Canada, right, depending on the next election. But I can only think of one project that we did where they were taking that into consider, taking the carbon tax into consideration. And in that case, they went with a 10-year payback, right? So, they were happy on without the carbon tax on a 10-year payback because they knew, okay, price of carbon is probably going to go up and the payback will probably be less than 10 years. So, great. Thank you so much. Thanks for your interest. And